Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'll turn the meeting over to Mr. Alan Tissier.
Welcome. This is a webinar presentation by the Division of Environmental Biology to introduce our new solicitation for CORE programs. My name is Alan Tessier. I'm here at NSF in a room with a number of other program officers from all of the different clusters within the Division of Environmental Biology. This is being recorded. And this entire presentation, voice included, will be available for download after this. So if you have to leave, you can always go back and access this from the same website where you registered for this meeting. There's about 18 slides here. We're going to try and move through them pretty fast, and you're going to have to hold your questions until the end. We're enforcing that your mics are muted, so you won't be able to have any voice come across. You can, however, make use of the chat window if you need to, and you can always email questions to DEB questions after this presentation as well, and we'll be answering those if you don't find your question answered. Okay. What is changing here? As of the next deadline date, which would have been January 9th and still is January 9th, proposal submissions will have to conform to a new division-wide solicitation, NSF 11-573, which is available on the NSF website. And also the URL link is listed there. We said conform to the solicitation because there are obviously other solicitations that you can submit proposals to, including two core programs, and they are described within this solicitation as to how this solicitation impacts submissions through those other solicitations. Okay, specifically, what is changing? Not advancing. There we go. This new solicitation is actually one of several new solicitations which have been issued by the Biological Sciences Director at NSF. As many of you know, several years ago, one of the four divisions within BIO, the Division of Biological Infrastructure, shifted to once-a-year submissions of their programs. A little more recently, in May, the Division of Molecular and Cellular Biosciences changed the way they receive proposals and shifted to a once-every-8-month submission with only a single submission allowed per PI each time. So that was 3 times every 2 years. The rest of our presentation here concerns very recently announced solicitations, one governing IOS and one governing DEB, that's the Division of Integrated Organismal Systems and the Division of Environmental Biology. Although there are two different solicitations, they are very similar, they're in parallel. Both of those solicitations require that proposal submitted to the core programs in those divisions have to start with a pre-proposal submitted to the January 9th deadline. The 9th is for DEB. IOS may be a different day, but still January deadline. And then full proposals are by invitation only, and their submission date is in August, August 2nd for DEB. What types of proposals are being affected by this solicitation? Basically, any proposal that that is a, you know, a research proposal that would have normally been submitted to our January or July panel cycle deadlines, either through the grant proposal guide for NSF or directly to the program descriptions for the programs in IOS or DEB, must now conform to these new solicitations. In addition, any proposal that would have been submitted to one of these two divisions through the RUI, the Research at Undergraduate Institutions, or through the Long-Term Research in Environmental Biology, LTREBS, solicitation must conform to the same new solicitation which require pre-proposals in January. In IOS, what we mean by those core programs are any of the programs listed on this slide in the four clusters within IOS. There is a separate webinar that will be scheduled to discuss these changes with the IOS program officers. In DEB, we also have four clusters, and here is a listing of all of the programs that are affected by this new solicitation. There are a number of existing solicitations that are very relevant for investigators that are typically supported by DEB, and they are not changed by this solicitation. They are not impacted in any way. We list some examples here. Obviously, the career solicitation, which is NSF-wide, which has a July deadline, those proposals will still be accepted by all these core programs. And then there's a number of other solicitations you see here that are not changed. Their deadlines may be revised from year to year if those solicitations change, but they're not impacted by the new solicitation in DEB or IOS. Some of these, however, like RCN, accept proposals, and the solicitation instructs principal investigators to submit them to a core program depending on the deadlines for that core program. And in DEB, that deadline will be the August 2nd deadline. Note also that the DIGs, the Doctoral Dissertation Improvement Grants, are not changing. Those will still come in as full proposals according to the deadline in that solicitation. Also, all of the programs in IOS and DEB will continue to accept the conference and workshop proposals, EAGERs, RAPIDs, or supplements to existing awards as described in the grant proposal guide for NSF. So there are no changes to those types of requests. Okay, why are we making these changes in DEB and IOS? What was the motivation for this? Over the last decade, there have been rather dramatic changes in the number of proposals submitted to NSF overall, but particularly within bio. And everybody, both people at NSF handling those proposals and people in the science community writing and reviewing those proposals, have remarked on the trend. And basically, at this point, we are approaching the situation where 90% of the proposals being written and reviewed are being declined and either have to be revised and resubmitted on average 2 to 3 times before they are funded, if they are funded. And this is basically making the entire system very inefficient in terms of workload for everybody, people writing the proposals, reviewing them, handling them at our end. And it was really these trends which have been followed over the past several years that were the motivation to make changes. And let me come back to that in a minute, but first show you some data for DEB to indicate what I mean by these trends. Here you can see how during the past decade, the number of projects, that is to say unique individual projects, not counting collaboratives as a single project, have increased over the last 10 years, nearly doubling within DEB. And you'll note that our awards, on the other hand, have been pretty unchanged. Now, it is true that our budgets went up substantially during the first half of this decade, but the fact of the matter is that the cost of doing science also went up, and the scale of requests have increased. And so the number of awards has not changed very much. And the success rate, therefore, of funding has declined and is quickly approaching the 10% level on average. You'll note that the one year that was a good year for success rate was the year that we received the stimulus funding indicated by ARRA. So success rate having declined is an index of the problem here. But the real problem is perhaps seen best by looking at the burden on the reviewing community. The number of total reviews that we had to request to handle the increasing number of proposals being submitted continued to rise during the first half of 2000. And in DEB, we try to get about half the reviews from expert ad hoc review requests and the other half by panelists. And you can see how the number of ad hoc and panelist reviews rose until about 2006. At that point, we were so overburdened with proposals that in DEB, we basically made the decision to reduce the number of ad hoc reviews that we were requesting. And so you can see that the red line, the ad hoc review line, began to drop. We had to do that because our workload of getting more panelists and more panels is what we had to do, and you can see the number of panelist reviews, and that really meant more panels as well, continued to increase. But the net effect here is we could see that we were slowly and gradually switching over to a panel review process, and then often losing valuable expert reviews. I think everyone out there noticed this change. It became very common to only have four reviews going back to people in the last year or so, as opposed to in 2004, 2005, it was more typically five or six reviews. But also the quality of reviews began to decline. And in 2006, NSF launched a massive survey of the science community, sending out requests to over 44,000 individuals, everyone who had submitted a proposal as a PI or co-PI during 2004, 5, and 6. And more than 50% of those people responded to this survey, 24,000 responses. And overwhelmingly, people indicated that their reviewer burden was getting out of control, that they were having to review so much that the quality of their own reviews was going down, and that they felt that NSF really needed to do something. Over 55% of the respondents indicated that in their mind, preliminary proposals were something that NSF should consider moving to. Since that time, that report is public. It's called IPAMM, I-P-A-M-M. You can find it from the NSF search. Since that time, from 2007, when that report was released, we in DEB have talked with panelists routinely. We've talked to our committees of visitors. We've talked with advisory committees and heard the message that something had to be done to reduce the workload of writing, reviewing, and recommending proposals. So what are the details behind or inside this new solicitation? As we said, it is a once-a-year deadline now, January. It requires a pre-proposal that comes in. The pre-proposal is only four pages of text and then one page that describes the PI, co-PI, senior personnel team. The preliminary proposals are a requirement in order to submit a full proposal. And there's a limit on how many pre-proposals can be submitted in January. The limit is two per individual if the individual is a PI or a co-PI on any planned institutional submission. So if it's a collaborative project that's going to be viewed as a full proposal stage, anyone who would be a PI or co-PI on one of those institutional submissions is restricted to no more than two pre-proposal submissions. In addition, if you are going to be the lead individual on a subaward on any of those, you also fall under this restriction. Not included on a limit here are other senior personnel, individuals who could be involved in the project as other senior personnel. If they're not a PI, a co-PI, or a lead on a subaward, there are no restrictions on how many pre-proposals you can be involved in. The pre-proposals will be reviewed by panel only. You would expect to get three reviews back from them, as well as a panel summary. And the panel will be advising NSF program officers on whether to invite or not invite a full proposal, and we will get those decisions out in early May. If you are invited, you then have until the August 2nd deadline to prepare your full proposal and submit it. Only invited proposals will be allowed to submit to the August deadline. The only exception to that would be proposals that come in as RCNs or OPIS proposals. Those two are not having to go through the pre-proposal stage. And LTREB renewals. Regular first-time LTREB proposals do have to go through the pre-proposal stage, but the renewal, which is viewed as at the five-year stage, can come in August 2nd without having gone through the pre-proposal. The full proposals will be reviewed, again, by panel, but they, depending on the program officer, may also request ad hoc expert reviews. And we anticipate that the full proposal panel will occur around October, and then we would be giving decisions about awards or declines by the beginning of December, a month before the pre-proposals are starting again. So to summarize this cycle that we anticipate having, an annual cycle, it starts in January, and for those who get awards, hearing by the beginning of December. The pre-proposal format should be far less work to produce. In addition to the standard cover page and project summary, the project description, as I said, is only five pages, and the first page is simply a listing of all the senior personnel. Within that list, you have to indicate the status of each person, the role they will play on a full proposal. And in essence, there's two groups of people. There are those who fall under the restriction of being a PI, co-PI, or lead on a subaward, and then there are other senior personnel who you can include but are not falling under the restriction of being on only two pre-proposals. These other senior personnel, as well as the PI, co-PI, and subaward leads, are all allowed to include their bio sketches, NSF format largely, but there are some changes. And one of those changes is that the list of conflicts is provided as a single copy document for everybody involved. The main pre-proposal will be really just the four pages, page 2 to 5 of the project description. There's no budget required. There's no section on facilities. No appendices or other supplementary documents will be allowed. This includes no need for a postdoc mentoring plan and no data management plan on the pre-proposal. Okay, what guidance are we trying to give people on the pre-proposals? Well, as with any proposal, of course, it should be a pretty compelling and convincing argument that makes a reviewer want to fund this. But more specifically, we have spent quite a bit of time when we were planning this thinking about what guidance we would give to panels and reviewers as they look at these pre-proposals. And the advice we're giving people is sort of bulleted here. I'd say the first three bullets are all addressing a similar issue, which is, what's this proposal about? What's the main question? What's the main phenomena under study? What's the novel idea that the PI has? in terms of addressing something that captures the interest of reviewers, in terms of its potential to advance knowledge that's general and beyond just the specific study system. In addition, the pre-proposal should also describe the basic approach that would be used to address this question or hypotheses or whatever the aims are. And it should also, making use of the bio sketches, but also describing specifically, if necessary, in the pre-proposal project description, the ability of the team to actually conduct this research. And fourth, it should outline what the planned broader impacts would be. So the review criteria are still basically intellectual merit and broader impact. And the intellectual merit will really focus on, you know, what's the main idea, what's the approach, and what's the capability of the team to carry it out. The pre-proposal panels will be advisory to the program officers. And what we will ask the pre-proposal panelists to give us feedback on is outlined here. And in many ways, again, they're the same issues that we ask panels on full proposals to evaluate. But I think the key here is that on the pre-proposals, it really will be more front and center. How novel, how innovative are the questions being addressed here? What is the motivation? How is it conceptually grounded within frameworks or theories that have been used to address these phenomena? What is the approach? Is it feasible? Does it look feasible? Is it innovative? Perhaps a fairly classic question is being addressed from a novel approach. And again, how well qualified are the PIs, co-PIs, other senior personnel to bring to bear on this? And is there a convincing and a sincere effort to broaden the impact of this work if it were to be conducted? Again, the panels will be advisory to the program officers in recommending invite or do not invite. Ultimately, the program officers will make the decision. They will consider other things that we will not ask the panel to consider, such as other existing awards in the program that already exist, our portfolio, what we're already funding, the diversity of our portfolio with regard to the career level, young versus more senior people, underrepresented groups, geographic location, institution type. It is the responsibility of the program officers to balance the portfolio. Oops. Second. See if I did. Nope. Goes from 17 to 16, 17. One of the issues that we get asked a lot is what NSF means by potentially transformative. And we had a couple of slides here. I'll see if the next slide has the other one. But this slide discusses, presents graphically something that we show panels and will probably continue to show pre-proposal panels as well. What we mean by risk, what it describes here is the fact that risk has sort of two dimensions. There's the boldness risk, which is something that we really value. We're looking for ideas that are bold and innovative. And at the same time, there's the recognition that risk comes from the feasibility, the ability to actually conduct or have the research work out to get answers. And historically, people tend to balance these two by wanting to reduce feasibility risk while maximizing boldness risk. The line describing the distinction between invite or not invite decisions is meant to imply that we recognize it's not a simple trade-off here, that we really value the boldness riskiness, even if it incurs substantial feasibility risk. And so we ask panelists to take that into consideration when they're making their recommendations. Off the other slide. The other issue I'll just describe for you is this notion of transformative potential. As you obviously have heard, tend to value the potential of proposals to transform a discipline as a key intellectual merit. And recently, the National Science Board implemented that potentially transformative research should be part of the intellectual review criteria of all proposals. One of the ways we sort of tell panelists that they should consider this in their own mind is to consider the potential for an increase in knowledge advancement from a particular proposed idea, and to really look for proposals that seem to be on the cutting edge of ideas. They may not be ideas that have really caught on yet, but they seem to be ideas that have the potential to really generate a lot of new interest and knowledge. And so we try to instruct panels that the difference between incremental research and this research that has the potential to really transform a field is what we mean by transformative potential. That's all right, John. We'll just move on. The questions can now get started in a minute. I just want to point out that there's enough resources online for you. Obviously, the solicitation is something you should read in depth. There's also some frequently asked questions, which we're not sure how frequently they'll be asked because we had to start this. Is where we were asking ourselves when we put this together. You can email any DEB program officer with questions, but we also have a central email site, DEB questions, one word, DEBquestions@nsf.gov. And this webinar posting, and we'll put the correct slide on for that transformative potential, will be posted again at the same website where you registered for this. If you have specific concerns at a more general level, you can ask or send an email to Penny Firth, who's the acting division director in DEB, or, and some of you may not know this yet, but we have a new assistant director for biological sciences, John Wingfield, who is the former division director in IOS, and you can also send concerns to him directly. Okay, I think we are going to switch over to entertaining questions at this point.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask an audio question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. To withdraw your request, you may press star, then two. Once again, to ask a question, please press star, one. One moment, please. Catherine Burns, you may ask your question.
Yes, hi, thanks. My question is, to how much do you expect this new strategy to increase the fund rate? And is there a target fund rate that you guys are shooting for?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean by fund rate, but...
Success of getting an award if you've submitted an application.
Well, we're anticipating that there'll be a lot of pre-proposals, and there'll still be, a filter there. There's still going to be a significant reduction in what gets invited. And then there's going to be another filter at the full proposal stage. And we are hoping that for the full proposals, our funding rate for those full proposals will be significantly higher than it currently is now. That is to say, the reason for putting in this pre-proposal as a filter is to reduce the work that needs to be done at the full proposal stage to have a higher likelihood of being funded. Yeah, our overall budget is not changing here. I mean, not that we ever know our budget in the future, but I mean, our budget is set by Congress, and so at any given moment, we may know what we have in front of us. But in terms of budget, the number of awards, the size of awards, the types of awards, where those awards are going, we're not necessarily anticipating any changes there. What we're trying to do is reduce the work involved in getting to that point.
Yeah, I guess my question would more appropriately be asked of those people or, groups submitting full proposals, to what is there a rate at which you're shooting to get? Nature, the question is, are you going to be soliciting a lot of full proposals or a drastically reduced number of proposals, half the number of current?
This is the first time through, but we are certainly hoping that the funding rate from the full proposal panel will be 2 to 3 times greater than it has been currently. That is to say, yes, we are hoping it will be higher. But do we have a number or something? Are we trying to manage around a success rate? No.
Okay, thanks.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then 1. One moment. At this time, I show no further questions. I'm sorry, one just popped up. One moment. Seth Bordenstein, you may ask your question.
Yeah, I was wondering what the expected workload would be for panel members during the pre-proposal evaluation. In other words, is it expected that they'll be doing about double what we've been used to in the past because there may be twice as many short proposals coming in?
We'd love suggestions on what you think you can do.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good answer. At least there's flexibility in discussing that.
We are still planning how we will run the pre-proposal panel since they're not going to be occurring until about next March or April. So we don't have decisions fully on this, and we would actually love your opinions about what kind of load you can handle. We certainly anticipated it would be more pre-proposals that a panelist will read than full proposals would have been. But it's not exactly the same math to just do it by the number of pages, right? So
right.
So we realize it will be quite a bit more than full proposals. But other than that, I think it's still a bit of an experiment for us, and it will depend on how many pre-proposals are submitted.
Okay. And do you expect that the invite, non-invite line will be determined by the panel recommending who should be above that line and below that line?
Well, we wouldn't go to all the effort to have a panel if we weren't going to take their advice very seriously. And in general, we do follow their advice in regard to the intellectual and broader impact merits. But as I said, we also have other constraints that we are responsible for in balancing our portfolio to fulfill NSF's mission. And therefore, there may be times where a panel invites and we say not invite, and there may be times where the panel says not invite and we say invite. But in general, we expect a pretty high correlation between what the panel says and what we end up doing.
Thank you. If I can, one final question. Will the panel members be different between the pre-proposal review and the final review?
Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of nodding heads around the room by the program officers that will be running those panels. But, yes, we certainly intend that there will be not just the same people. There might be some overlap, but by far we're really shooting for different panels.
Thank you.
Your next question is from Jim Goss.
Oh, hold on one second. We've got a couple of questions that have come in through text from folks who are not attached to the audio line, so we're going to handle one of those real quickly and then trade off to the next audio person.
Thanks.
Hi, this is Sam Shiner. So we have a question. I'll just read it. For the title of the proposal project, I do not understand what is meant by additional acronyms for accomplishment-based renewal, ABR, or research in undergraduate institutions, RUI. So the ABRs and RUIs are particular categories of proposals. This also holds for OPIS. And you're asked when you submit those proposals to start the title with that acronym. It just makes it easier for everybody to know that this is a special category of proposal. But otherwise, those proposals are going to go through the same panel and have pretty much the same review criteria. I hope that's answered your question.
Okay, we'll go to the next audio question, please.
James Goss.
Hi, I was wondering if this change in the EB in bio has been reviewed by the Science Board and whether you see this as a long-term change in programming and whether or not other divisions' directorates are going to follow suit.
Hi, Jim. Penny Firth here. The change that we're making is has been looked at by a variety of folks around the foundation and, of course, was approved all the way up to the director of the foundation. And we are, in fact, going into this hoping that it will make a positive change but open to the possibility of altering or adjusting in future years if the data seem to demand some kind of a tuning up in the future. But we're hoping that what we try this time is going to work.
And broader throughout the foundation, any discussion from other directorates?
Yes.
Positive, you mean?
Yes, positive and discussion. Positive discussion.
Okay.
Okay.
So we've got another text question that we're going to tackle real quick.
Okay. So there's a question about how much detail does the pre-proposal panel expect in terms of broader impacts compared to the project description? And it's, I would say, it's the same ratio as you would have in a regular proposal. So in a 15-page regular proposal, there's somewhere between a half a page to a page typically for broader impacts. And so on a proportional basis, that would be somewhere between a quarter to a half a page at most on broader impacts in a pre-proposal.
Okay, do we have any more audio questions on the line?
Yes, Nate. Next up would be Jacob Kirby.
Yeah, hi. I just have a question a little bit on the logistics of the pre-proposal panel, if it's going to be similar to the regular panel. That is, are the reviewers going to judge it on sort of a poor, good, you know, excellent criteria? And then I guess the idea is instead of a fund or do not fund or all the subdivision categories, it's a panel, you know, full proposal or no full proposal recommendation. And with that, also a secondary question is, will the pre-proposal panels have ad hoc panelists as well, or is it just simply a panel at that stage?
So a few questions there. The pre-proposals will not have ad hoc reviews. They will be panel-only reviews. How those panels will run is something that there may be some experiments with, but in general, in DEB, we are thinking of still having three panelists who write reviews, and those reviews would have scores submitted through Fastlane the way all proposals are reviewed on a five-point scale from poor to excellent. The panel will meet and discuss each of the pre-proposals, again, it'll mostly revolve around the three assigned panelists, and we are likely going to just ask them to give us a thumbs up or thumbs down, invite or not invite recommendation category on the proposals. We in DEB don't rank the individual ones, but we will obviously want to hear from the panelists as to why. And there will be a panel summary written to give you feedback on how those panelists ended up feeling about a given proposal, pre-proposal.
And then just a follow-up question. That panel summary, if you're invited for a full proposal, will we get that panel summary or no?
Yes, you will get it regardless. You'll get the reviews. Everybody will get the reviews and the panel summary if that's the set. If for some reason the program decides to not follow the advice of the panel, then you would also get a comment from the program officer explaining why.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so we had on the chat line the question, can you comment on the proposal limit per PI, especially in light of potential impacts on funding of collaborative interdisciplinary research? So the way we came up with the limit of two per person was actually by a detailed analysis of how many proposals the average person is submitting in a given year or is involved in. And most people, was it 95%, I believe, submit only one or two proposals per year. So that limit should affect very, very few individuals. And we remind you that you can be involved in more than two proposals, but it would be in the other senior personnel category. So the only thing this limits you to is in roles of PI, co-PI, or the lead on a subaward. We don't actually expect this to really affect collaboration and interdisciplinary research. And we'll also remind you, of course, that this is only for the core programs, and we have a number of other programs, many of them aimed specifically at interdisciplinary research, where a lot of those kinds of proposals come in.
We've got another question on the text line that we'll answer.
Well, again, it'll be a once-a-year call. The question is, what will the process be for resubmitting pre-proposals that are not invited or invited proposals that are not funded? In general, if you are declined, either at the pre-proposal or full proposal stage, you start over again with a new pre-proposal for the January 9th deadline. So we are not... it does mean that if you're declined on all pre-proposals that you hear in May, you have to wait until January 9th if you are planning to submit another proposal to the core program. So as Sam said, we have a lot of other deadlines for other solicitations which come up during the course of the year, but if you are planning a proposal to come into, for instance, the ecosystem science program, the deadline is January 9th each year for pre-proposals, regardless of whether or not it's a resubmission.
And just to sort of amplify this, and one thing people need to keep in mind, as Alan has already said, the number of awards that we're going to make is not going to change. So your ultimate chance of getting funded really will be the same. It's just that you're submitting once a year rather than twice. We'll get twice as many pre-proposals in January as we would have gotten full proposals across the year. And most people only actually submit once a year. So again, for some people, it will be a shift in terms of when they put that proposal in, but no real effective change in what's going to happen in terms of funding. Any other audio questions?
We do have one more question. Kai Hung.
Hi. Yes. My question is, with the review on the pre-proposal, the comments from the panel, are those going to be advanced to be seen by the full proposal review? In other words, are we doing a cumulative scoring between the two rounds, or do we start completely clean at the full proposal round?
So that's actually a question we haven't discussed much internally. Basically, the full proposal will not, again, it'll be a different panel than the pre-proposal. It'll be different people, and they will start out reading that full proposal without any other information in front of them other than the full proposal. So their review initially, for sure, is based only on the full proposal. We haven't talked in-house about whether or not we would show the panelists when they arrive panel summary from the pre-proposal panel. So I can't answer that part of the question. But certainly the reviews, including ad hoc reviews, will be based solely on the full proposal submission.
Thank you.
So do we have any other questions at this time by audio or chat, if you so desire?
There are no questions on the audio side.
Well, in that case, I want to thank everybody. Please let people know that this is being posted, so other people who could not make this, I'm sure, may want to download it and listen to it. And again, you can submit questions to DEB questions at nsf.gov at any time. And if we hear certain ones that we think are really relevant or clarifying, we will also adjust the frequently asked questions or add new ones there. So again, thank you all.